Are you tired of the Pravda on the Platte, the cow pie, the Wyoming turkey vulture? Perhaps you should try something new, like the Independence Network.
It's Crosstalk Live.
Welcome to Crosstalk Live. I'm Ken. This is a special edition, and we'll get to why it's special in just a sec. But first of all, I want to greet Joey. It's good to see you, sir.
Well, it's good to be here. And I got to say, it's good for all of us to be here. The eclipse happened earlier. The earth is still spinning. There was a lot of conjecture and conspiracy about everything falling apart. But fun fact, if you take the first letter of the word eclipse and the name, the first letter of each county in the path of totality from Texas to Maine, it spells Epstein didn't kill himself.
I saw that. That was fascinating. Who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thought? And we're not even talking about Nicholas's apartment or his house in Cheyenne.
That, my friends, is the golden voice of cowboy state politics behind the silver microphone firmly ensconced. Welcome, David.
How's it going, Ken?
Pretty fair so far. I'll let you know in about an hour.
Fair enough.
All right. And then I told you this was a special edition. And the reason it's a special edition is seated to my right this evening is none other than Dr. Tom Kelly, Facebook warrior extraordinaire. Please explain that.
Well, first of all, you mean physically to your right, because we know that I'm not to your... No one's to the right of Ken Pendergraft. We know that.
Except for me.
You said it.
Well, survey says...
All right, so my day job still, God willing, is a college professor. So I love using Facebook as a tool, kind of like to just flush out thoughts that I don't want to bring to the classroom. Because you have most professors, I'm sorry, not most, there are professors who bring their politics into the classroom, even if they're teaching physics. So I teach political science, and I don't think my students should know how I vote. What I do is I go on Facebook. I have thoughts, I have partisan ideas, I put them out there, I flush them out, then I go in the classroom. Well, one of the great places to read up on politics is Cowboy State Daily. Because they actually attempt to get both sides in there. Go to Wildfowl, go to the Casper Tribune. You might as well just come from the New York Times. But I go to Cowboy State Daily. There's some independent journalism. Go ahead and criticize all you want. There is some independence there. I like to read stuff there because I actually get quotes from you guys sometimes. Well, not Joey. But
they will at least print some of our op-eds.
Yeah, exactly. You guys are in there. So I see this article about Slagle going in a rematch against Williams.
Yeah.
And I'm reading the quote on what Williams says, why he's running and everything. And I know nothing about J.D. Williams other than the fact that he's a former incumbent looking to get his seat back. But the language looks very familiar to me. Again, I'm a political scientist. So what I see is this move by the Wyoming caucus in general, or... I'll come back to who the Wyoming caucus is because we don't know that they're trying to move the race away from principles and talk about individual personalities. And that's how they're going to win race by race. That's how they're going to maintain their power. They're going to blunt this wave of conservatism in the Freedom Caucus by making each race individualized.
The reason they do that, and you know this, is because if they try to meet us on the field with ideas, with data, with information, with facts, they get their butt whipped.
Exactly. And that was the point I was making. I said they're doing this because they have to win on personality because they cannot win on principle. Well, I get this reply from somebody that's angry and it's got typos in it. And I thought at first it was a parody account because it was kind of like an angry teenager had written it. And then I'm like, this can't be correct. And it turns out it actually is the Wyoming Senate president ranting at me about how I wouldn't know anything about good character, even though I didn't talk about anyone's character. I didn't impugn anyone's character. I talked about the Wyoming caucus's strategy. So I went back and forth a little bit with this, but it was just stunning to me the whole time that I was thinking, how did this guy become the head of the Senate? He was, it was very much like a bullying intimidation tactic.
It's called the Peter Principle.
They just come out there and just say, like, listen, oh, look what a horrible guy Tom is. Look, how dare he say something about salt of the earth, JD? I don't know anything about JD other than the fact that he's running again. But I do know that that knee-jerk defensiveness really is, it really implicates what I was saying was true at that point. And so I come back and say, well, obviously you can't talk to me on about the principles. You can't talk to me about the issues. So of course, this is what a professional politician does who has a weak track record. You attack somebody's character. And I kind of left it alone after that point. At one point, he accused me of slander, which, I mean, you'd think, you know, a senator would know at least that it's libel, not slander, but really on Facebook. And I was just astounded by the whole thing because I'm nobody.
Now, there's an interesting dimension to this. And so, Joey, when all of this was happening, and it, at the same time he was going back and forth with Tom, he was going back and forth with me also. But there's an interesting dimension to this. And, Joey, why don't you tell us where Ogden Driscoll was while all of this was happening?
Well, he was somehow, and in violation of the rules of decorum of the slib board, sitting on the dais of the slib board. So he was in our discussion this morning on the morning show. We talked about how that's a violation of utilizing your position as a government official or a public servant to conduct electioneering, because he was doing both at the same time and everything matches up. The timestamps on the Facebook posts, the YouTube video of when this was happening with him just sitting there doing nothing but playing on his phone. And had he not taken that seat up front in the slip board meeting, there really wouldn't be that argument. But because he put himself up there, he was acting in his official capacity while he was playing, you know, playground slap fight with you and David and promoting a candidate for office.
And let's take that one step further. You're using that position as a top government official to try and intimidate a voter to shut up, basically.
Oh, yeah.
That is harrowing for most people, that you have a top government official accuse you of a criminal activity, slander. That will shut most people down.
Not in Wyoming, though.
Well, that's why I moved. I fit in here. I'm like, this doesn't work on me.
And remember, it's very Augie that he would accuse you of committing a crime that he can't really prove or back up while he's committing a crime we can prove and back up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the funny part about it is the first time I actually met J.D. Williams, I was down. It may have been the special session, but for whatever reason, I was in Cheyenne. And I was talking with another legislator up in the gallery. Well, here comes J.D. Williams, and I think Representative Nyman was with him. And, you know, they introduced me. Well, David, this is Representative Williams. And he shakes my hand, and he had kind of like this. And anybody that has, like, the weak, cold fish handshake, it immediately makes my skin crawl. I just don't think you're a man. Well, anyway, J.D. Williams says, well, you know, I really love your program, and I'd like to come on sometime. And my immediate reply was, no, I don't think you would. I've seen your voting record. Now, the follow-up to that is a couple weeks after that, I had already been invited to speak over in Newcastle. And, you know, it was just kind of a state of politics, where we're at. J.D. Williams comes walking in, and he sits right in the front row, like not 3 feet from where I was speaking. And I spent the next 30 minutes ripping on him, on every vote that he had made and not being a conservative.
Did he even notice?
No, he sat there smiling the whole time. And, you know, the funny part is I'd crack a joke about him and the entire room would laugh and he'd just sit there and smile. I mean, I don't know that much about him beyond his voting record. And his voting record is actually kind of interesting. He's slightly less conservative than the bulk of the Freedom Caucus. In 2021 was the last year he was in there. I mean, he was on YoVote. I don't know. He was at least, you know, in right around the top third. So, I mean, fairly conservative. But the interesting thing about it, Ogden Driscoll is defending him. And, I mean, those two things are just completely incongruous. You know, Ogden Driscoll normally would be attacking anyone that's anywhere in the neighborhood of the Frontier Caucus, but he's picked J.D. Williams to run against Alan Slagle. Alan Slagle is, he's a father of nine. He's a Wyoming rancher, a very upstanding guy. We tease him all the time that he might be Amish. And
That is a great beard.
Oh, man. I mean, he has a great beard. But he is an upstanding guy. I've never heard a swear word come out of his mouth, even in situations where it would be completely acceptable. Never would come out of Alan Slagle's mouth. So my response to Ogden Driscoll was, as opposed to, you know, another legislator who has morals, who has character, who has convictions, why are you, this seems kind of like a backhanded slap at Representative Slagle, was my comment to him. And, of course, the reply was, oh, no, I wasn't saying anything against Alan Slagle. I'm like, okay, really? You know, but again, to your point, Tom, it's absolutely amazing that the president of the Wyoming Senate is, I mean, knowing Ogden, it's not surprising, but in the sense of he is the president of the Wyoming Senate and he's on Facebook slapping around Wyoming voters.
Yeah, I was surprised as if like Governor Gordon got on and started complaining to me. I'd be like, hey, I'm nobody. What is this all about? What? Of course he's going to back Williams, though, because if you got Slagle and Williams, who's further left? You got two people running. You get to unseat somebody from the Freedom Caucus at that point. Anyway, when you've got people running and you look and you see the campaign materials and it's nothing but this is a good person, this is a good neighbor, this is a true Wyomingite, this is somebody you'd like to have a beer with. These are not people to vote for because they don't have a record or they don't have principles to stand up. Understand what your principles are. Pick the candidate that will best represent you in Cheyenne, not the one who'd be more fun to have for a barbecue.
Yeah, I mean, take your friends.
I'll give David a little piece of advice here. I think you're getting ahead of yourself. Earlier you said the Frontier Caucus. That's not till the next story, David.
Oh, sorry.
I caught that.
David, of course, was talking about the Freedom Caucus and how Ogden Driscoll would be, of course, opposed to any candidate that's associated. A couple other things. Yeah, I'm not going to get into the manliness of his handshake. I know J.D. Williams in passing. We've spent a little bit of time together in the Republican Party when he was on the State Central Committee. I don't know him to be a bad guy. Does a lot of great things with the FFA. He's very involved with, of course, ranching in the agriculture community. But we're going to get back down to the brass tacks, which is if you had a seat, which he wasn't elected to.
No, he's appointed.
He filled a vacancy when Hans Hunt stepped out. And your first election, you lost. And the comparison of the voting records between the two individuals, the current incumbent and you when you were in there, says what it says. It goes back to the classic problems with conservatives. I think I could do a better job. Yeah, but you didn't have a more conservative voting record. If you've already got a good, solid conservative in the position doing the job, it has to be something else. And these are the questions I would like answered from J.D. Williams. What do you think you're going to bring that Alan Slagle doesn't already do for conservative principles, for liberty, and for limited government? Because we already have one good guy in there. And if all the focus is on two guys that are either kind of conservative or really conservative fighting it out, we might have that third candidate, that area up there between Campbell County all the way down into, I think, almost down to Goshen County. They're, you know, historically, they always throw in or have a third candidate that is anything but close to conservative. Look at the Senate District 1 race when Bill Fortner, I think it was, wouldn't get out of the way, and we ended up with Ogden Driscoll again. So I would love to have a conversation with J.D. Williams. I will invite him on my show, but I just want to know, you know, personalities aside, I think your handshake is just fine. Tell me about what you have or what you're going to bring that Alan Slagle doesn't have. And I'm really interested to see if that turns into a more conservative posture. And if it does, then the question is, why couldn't you have done that in the first year you were in?
Exactly right.
Yeah, well, handshakes, I don't care if they give me a high five or an NFL butt slap as long as they vote the correct way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's important. I don't know how many times I've spoken to people who voted, for example, for Cyrus Western. He's a nice guy. I like him. You know, we sit down and have a beer or something. Okay.
I like Cyrus. Yeah, I know him personally. He's a good guy.
Go have a beer with him. but don't have him go represent you after you've seen what he produces.
Yeah, take your friends to dinner. Don't vote for them.
Vote for some jerk like me that'll go down and stand right, but you don't want to be around, right?
That's the standard rule. This is politics. If you want a friend, go get a dog. If you want to feel like a good person, go to church. If you want to feel better about what you're doing with your life, go to therapy. That is not politics. That is not what your vote should be.
Well, Joey, now I got to go to therapy because you forgot my dog died yesterday.
Oh, man.
Brought the whole show down.
There's a fine line between not remembering and not caring, and I'm sorry. I'll tell you what you can do with your feelings.
If I did not have such a dark sense of humor, I would not love you guys so much.
Well, speaking of dogs, a particular writer made an interesting slip. I guess you'd call it a slip. Maybe she doesn't even know. But Joan Baron said the Frontier Freedom Caucus, and I think that was probably on David's mind when he made that little slip earlier. But let's talk a little bit about her article about the Frontier Freedom Caucus.
It's an op-ed in the Pravda on the Platte. So it's an op-ed.
Is that a record scratch?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just making sure because it hasn't.
Isn't that great? So it's actually the national anthem for Russia. But anyway.
I meant the sound after.
So it's an op-ed in the Pravda on the Platte. And she's writing about the same old drivel. Has the legislature permanently changed? And she refers to the Wyoming Freedom Caucus as the Frontier Freedom Caucus. And I'm one of those people that I don't believe that there's any coincidences in politics. And throughout her article, she refers to the Frontier Freedom Caucus. And then she starts abbreviating it. So first, it's an allusion, I think, to what she believes is a fringe group that was around for a little while and then faded away. You know, of course, we all know that the Frontier Republicans never faded away. They just changed their name to the Wyoming Caucus. Her op-ed it's the same old stuff, the allusions to the traditions of the Senate and you know, I think that Senator Kinski put it best when he made a motion on the floor to bring out House Bill 125. Here's what he said right here.
But continuing on the traditions, it's not a sad day. This is just politics. There may have been a day and an age when there was a genteel tradition, when people drank their tea with their pinkies out, and everything was according to Hoyle.
Exactly right. So part of the article is referring to the genteel traditions of the legislature. And then she goes on to list a number of ways that what she calls the Frontier Freedom Caucus has infringed on those traditions.
The genteel traditions of the legislature. I wonder how many people who had frequented the Hitchin Post Inn in Cheyenne in years past would call the traditions of the legislature genteel.
I don't think anybody would. I have heard stories about the Hitchin Post.
I just wanted to throw that in there because there is a way that business has been done in the Wyoming legislature for at least the last 60 years. And now we have a new group of people. And they're really not a new group of people. They're Wyoming people who have become aware of this genteel tradition and the crap that was going on and said, that's enough. And so when she asked the question, is this a permanent change to the legislature? I damn sure hope so.
I would hope so, too. And the things that she was complaining about, one of them I find particularly revolting, is complaining that there were too many roll call votes, and we've heard this from a number of different people, that the Freedom Caucus was calling for roll call votes, and that wasted a lot of time. So, excuse me, one of the genteel traditions of the legislature is to prevent your constituents from knowing how it is that you vote. I mean, that apparently is one of the traditions. And, I mean, I can give you you know, a dozen examples, different ways that they've tried to do this. Almost every single year, except for this one, there's a bill to put voting monitors in the legislative chamber. And almost the immediate argument is, oh, look at this beautiful chamber, this historic chamber. You don't want to change the look of this thing. And we don't want to be like Washington, D.C. And they go on and on and on. And really, what it is an attempt to prevent their voting record from becoming public. So the complaint about all these roll call votes is they weren't allowed to do that many voice votes.
Don't weaponize the system, David.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, so Dan Zwanitzer standing up saying, well, you're weaponizing the system by calling for roll call votes.
The same guy who doesn't want to check for residency?
Exactly. The same.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Joey, what do you think?
Well, yeah, it's just funny that when they did that $350 million remodel on the Capitol, both chambers and every single meeting room, all the way out through the underground annex, is actually set up to receive these instant vote count tallies. And it's very easy to set up. They actually have the beta software where you have it set up each chamber or whatever committee is meeting. Whoever could be voting is already set up. They just push their little Jeopardy button. You know, I'd like to answer now, Alex. What is a bad vote for 500? And it automatically records and instantly, you know, displays it. And then, of course, they can do the closing vote. You have 10 seconds to change your vote, whatever. It's already set up to do it. So we've already invested in the infrastructure in doing that. But I want to get back to the it's not a coincidence Frontier Freedom Caucus comment. I don't think it was a snap. Well, it could have been. It's one of two things. Either she has realized, and we might see this more from the left side of the right, that we have been so successful in taking these frontier cockroaches and bringing them out into the light like we were accused of being ourselves, and they have been so feeble in all of their attempts and failed at absolutely everything. Tom Lubnow, Joe McGinley, Peter Nicolaisen, Gail Simmons, never won an argument, never won a debate, have never won a vote on anything except for inside their own little group. That we did that so well across Wyoming that now they're attaching the Frontier name to the Freedom Caucus. So the uninformed voters like, wait a minute, I know Frontier is bad. And as soon as you hear Frontier, you're going to react adversely to the individuals. They could believe that they're that smart and the rest of Wyoming is that dumb. Luckily, we're here to kind of point that out and fix it and say, no, this is the conservative side. Or the other possibility, she's a completely clueless dumbass. And I would bet evenly on both, because I've read this lady's stuff for years. I've met her once. She's an idiot with a plan. That's why I don't think it was an accident. But hey, you know, she's also a total idiot.
Well, it's definitely a feeble attempt for sure.
I would suggest, in fact, I would probably even put it in a bill, that when we do take over the House and we do put up a vote tabulation board, that we get a little brass plaque that says a Steve Harshman Memorial Tally Board.
We need to go dig up a couple of his speeches where he's talking about look at this beautiful ceiling. Yeah. Isn't this ceiling beautiful?
Memorial, though. I mean, Driscoll's going to accuse you of attempted murder now, isn't he?
He can accuse me of whatever. I don't care. So, David, what does it take to become governor? What are the qualifications? Do you have to be married?
Not that I know of. You got to be, what, live in Wyoming for 5 years, be, what, 35 years old? Is that right, Joey? Yeah.
I don't even know if there's an age requirement, and I'm sure there is. I know president is 35, so governor, couldn't tell you. But yeah, it's basically all the same rules to be a voter, member of the electorate, don't be a felon, and you have to live here for 5 years, yeah. Preferably in the same location.
Well, no. We've learned from Dan Zwanitzer, it doesn't matter where you live.
And several others have taken up that mantra. But what I was getting at was there are some people who are wanting to run for governor. One of them would be Secretary of State Chuck Gray.
We've heard.
Yeah, but he's not married. How can you be governor? What am I missing?
And no kids either. I saw that. The article to which you're alluding, I know what you're talking about. You must be a married male with a married to a woman, an actual woman, and you need to have children, and you need to live in the state for at least 5 years. I check all the boxes.
Maybe you should run for governor. No, how long have you lived here?
It's been 5 years now.
Perfect.
But let's let the listeners in on what we're actually talking about.
All right.
Midweek last week, about, I don't know, 4 days ago, so the end of the week last week, the Cowpie published a story titled, "So You Want to Be Governor in Wyoming? It Helps to Be Male and Married with Kids." A Cowboy State daily analysis of Wyoming's 33 governors show some interesting commonalities among the state's highest office holders, including they're almost all male, married, and have kids, and knowing how to ride a horse is helpful too. Now, this is written from a historic standpoint based on information they pulled from the state archives, but almost immediately it jumps into how many secretaries of state have been governor before, how did that work, how did it happen, and who were our governors by, you know, these different demographics. I don't ever remember hearing Chuck Gray saying he was running for governor.
No, it's just been a rumor.
Every time I checked, it couldn't happen until 2026 anyway. So if they're preemptively throwing a tantrum or freaking out, fine. But the interesting thing to me was, this is all just, you know, data that says what has happened in the past. I don't know that that would necessarily be a requirement of voters for governor in the future. I don't know why I do know why, but they don't say why they specifically decided to pick out how many secretaries of state have become governor after that. Why didn't they do treasurers? That's Mark Gordon's path. But the really interesting thing was a follow-up op-ed from our pal, well, David's pal, Rod Miller.
I don't know if we're on speaking terms anymore.
You shouldn't be.
Well, apparently you're not on debating terms because he wouldn't show up for that one either.
Good exactly. Point.
But Rod Miller throws out a op-ed called "The Bride of Chucky" or "Advice from the Lovelorn Around the Old Campfire." Now, Rod takes a little different approach, and I think David could probably describe it best because I'll probably start swearing and then Ken will have to pray for me.
I already am.
Oh, how can I do this with not offending every single one of our listeners? Well, there are listeners, so they're probably not going to be offended at all. But Rod Miller makes several allusions to different animals that Chuck Gray could be married to. And, you know, in typical Rod Miller fashion, he wants to be as absolutely crass as he possibly can be. He's had a couple of different op-eds related to Chuck Gray, and all of them have tried to paint him as a little uninformed child, really a little petulant child. There was one about him showing up trying to wrangle votes around the campfire. But really, it's an attempt to just demean Chuck in the most puerile form possible. And, you know, I read it and I don't get offended by really anything. What I did think, though, was that, wow, really, dude, you're going to talk about a sheep? Come on now.
Yeah. I want to get to Tom in just a second, but there's an old expression, flak is always heaviest when you're right over the target.
Absolutely.
And this isn't necessarily about Secretary Gray. It's about anybody that actually stands on principle and fights for that principle. They are terrified of that, and that's why they're preemptively striking at anybody they think might fit that label. So I'm just going to ask Tom if he might jump in here for a minute. What do you think?
I think if I jump, I might hit my head on the ceiling. What I think is that Chuck Gray is being, they're trying to create a narrative around him that he's this spoiled man-child who never grew up, who daddy buys him things, including the office of the Secretary of State, and it doesn't stick because Chuck is sharp as broken glass. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's got rock-solid principles. So to make fun of him for the fact that he's not married and doesn't have kids, it's a low blow.
Way low.
Yeah, it really is. And as far as like Rod Miller's stuff goes, I love his column. I love the fact that he just doesn't give a flying leap and he says whatever he wants. And when people jump on him and say, you're factually wrong, he just hides behind, well, I'm a columnist, not a reporter. Whatever. I love the gumption. I disagree with him half the time. He's wrong the other half of the time, but I love his stuff. Okay. I admit I've liked some of his, I've agreed with some of them. Like he wrote one recently about government shouldn't pick for, like, they shouldn't censor like TikTok. That was right. But back to Chuck Gray, you're right. They're afraid of him. And I've never heard Chuck mention anything about being governor, but they can see him winning.
It's not just Chuck. It's anybody of his ilk.
Well, let's go back to the first topic. You know, the little Facebook spat you had with Ogden Driscoll. I mean, he was really trying to impugn the character of Alan Slagle, which, I mean, what kind of an idiot tries to go after Alan Slagle and talk about his character?
The kind who tries to take me on intellectually in front of public. Yeah, that's talk about running into a buzzsaw. That wasn't very smart.
Yeah, fair
and
point.
I took it easy on him.
Yeah. So, but it's, I think you're right, Ken, that, you know, they don't have anything left. You know, they can't beat the argument. There's no sense in trying to beat us on policy. So the only thing that they have left is to attack our character. And, I mean, that's, I think you're right. That's exactly what you're seeing. That's clearly what Rod Miller's piece was about. Joey?
Well, if nobody's going to say the words, I'm going to say the words. I got it up here in front of me. And Rod Miller says in his fake little campfire conversation about Chuck Gray, if a partner's all it takes to be governor, my cousin raises sheep out on the desert. We could go snag one for him. Stop right there, admonished Cookie. I ain't going to live in a state that has a governor and a first sheep. Well, if what it takes is a woman, then we should go. Let's go help find him one. Couple of things. One, the sheep thing, and I'll say it because I'm quoting Rod. It's even beneath Rod, which is already pretty low. I think you need an excavator to get where Rod decided to go with this one. And this is coming from me. So if you got to get, you know, humility and decorum advice from me, you got a problem. You need to go home and look in the mirror if you have any that are left. But the other thing is, he says in there, well, if it takes a woman, if he needs a woman, then let's go find him one. So apparently Rod Miller agrees with defining womanhood and didn't come out in any of his columns over the legislative session saying, no, we need to define woman. I use it in my my little goofball tirades all the time. My little land of fantasy says woman, and this is what woman means. Apparently he supports the reality. He just doesn't support the legislation because of who it came from. That's another example of exactly what David was saying. They want it their way. I have no doubt that eventually either Jeanette Ward's bill will go through or everything will go horribly wrong, and you'll see some kind of bastardized version of the What is a Woman Act come through from the other side. I had people that were completely opposed to my idea and my draft bill on Title 22 to equalize the responsibilities and the regulation of the political parties come up to me during the session saying, I think we can get that passed. If we just work together, I think now's the time to strike. I'm like, you don't believe in that. And even if you want that, it's not the principle that this was developed on. I'm talking about constitutional equality. You're talking about finding a way to steal power back. So I think that will come from the other side. But yeah, just about everything Rod says, even though he says it in this land of fiction, terribly concerning because he wants us to take him seriously. You know how you know he wants to be taken seriously? He won't fight back. He has one-way conversations, and that's how the old school does it. So if Rod Miller's definition of conservatism, republicanism, or manhood mean anything, then I guess I'm glad I'm not a cowboy or a conservative or a man in his eyes, because I don't want to be part of that. If you've seen that guy lately, mm-mm.
Yeah, what you're looking at there is it's fear. It's fear that his side is losing control. It's the same thing that Driscoll did. That fear coming after me, coming after Chuck, is fear that they're about to lose power because of this shift in the legislature. And it's not a radical right-wing takeover. It's rural Wyoming, which is most of the state, saying, what the hell is happening in Cheyenne? Why do they never vote the way they say they're going to? And now we have people actually getting represented there. That's why Ken's so confident about not really taking over the legislature, but the people of Wyoming actually being represented there. Thus, the argument that you guys are this radical fringe and you don't represent true Wyoming. Oh, yes, you guys do, because my friend Ken here is not a polished politician by any means, and he's still one just on his principles.
I want to go back to one more op-ed just because I think it fits in here. Poisonberry Crago. So he writes this dumb piece about if you're not from here, you shouldn't get involved in politics. And he goes on and on and on. And, you know, we're having an invasion from these out-of-staters. All the while, Barry Crago's from South Dakota. He's not from Wyoming either.
Yeah, but facts don't matter on that side.
Exactly.
Miller wrote about that, too. He talked about the I went off on Joey's show about this on Wide Right Turn. We were talking about weak people coming to Wyoming. Why would we want weak people like me here who couldn't handle doing things like fighting back the Chicago machine in Illinois?
Well, and it's you're exactly right. And where I was going with that is it's another example of them not having any arguments.
No substantive argument.
Right.
We're simply just flailing at straw men.
Well, another,
however,
go ahead, Joey.
They are obviously listening to the Independence Network, because I think from the very first episode of Crosstalk we recorded at Ken's house back in August, I've been making the same statement many, many episodes, many, many different shows, and it looks like the Cowpie and Rod Miller have been listening and are, hey, maybe this kid's got an idea. I've always said, if you've got an idea and you want it dealt with, you need to start 2 years before the people get to make a choice. And it's about 2 years before that election season where they're talking about Chuck Gray may run for governor happens. So we know they're listening, and I got to give them credit. They're taking great advice. Start 2 years early and stick with it the whole time. So all of this, not Wyoming enough, you're not married, all these reasons, they're planting those seeds in people's heads early enough, because I think they're going to do the whole 24-month run into the 2026 election season. And I got to give them credit for it. That's my plan all along. Start early, stick with it, and even after it passes, you may still have to amend and work that issue for a few more years.
But you never really have to start or stop if you're running on your principles at that point. We're always the same people. We always stand the same way on issues. Maybe new issues will come up, but there's really no grand strategy to just running on conservative, hardcore principles as opposed to not having them. Then you need a strategy to convince the voters you do have them when you don't.
Exactly. Exactly right. I've always been the proponent of, you know, I used to do a lot of coaching for high school debate. And when I was debating in college and winning a couple national championships, I never really changed my arguments. They were always the same principle-based arguments all the time. And my thinking was, hey, you haven't beaten them the last 30 times. Why would I change now? And that's where the Freedom Caucus, I think, is definitely on the right track. Not just the Freedom Caucus, but the conservatives. They're all principled people. They all believe in, you know, the things that I would confidently say the vast majority of Wyoming citizens believe in. Smaller government, lower taxes, don't mess with my guns, and liberty.
Look at the Republican platform based on what we call timeless truths. And yet every year we have to have a committee to go together and try to improve on that. When something is right, when it's true, and a number of different people see that, they're going to consistently appeal to that. And when the legislators on the right side of the House do that, they are portrayed by the other side as taking their marching orders from some national syndicate. And it is about as untrue and wrong as it can be. I could never speak to Alan Slagle. I could never speak to Sarah Penn. I could never speak to Abby Angelos. The list goes on. And when these sites come out, we're all going to rate very close to the same. Our votes are not going to be as tightly meshed as the other side, who actually, it appears, do march in lockstep with the Democrats.
Well, that's because most of them are Democrats. They just can't spell. You know, and all you got to do is turn on any news program, and it's at like every morning they all get the memo, and they're all repeating the same thing.
Here's the word of the day.
Yeah, exactly right. And actually, in the Wyoming legislature, there is words of the day, sideboards, you know, whatever. But when you, if you've never gone to any of these rating sites, one of the first ones I would suggest is Evidence-Based Wyoming. And they'll show you a graph of where all these people vote. And the conservatives, it's pretty spread out.
Cover about a third of the whole chart.
Yeah. And then if you look at the redcoats, it's all in this one tight little group, and they're all little blue dots. And what that tells you is they're all voting the same. They very rarely change. And it's really the conservatives who are voting. Their voting pattern is showing a broad range of, you know, opinions on a number of different issues. So it's, in my mind, it's classic projection. Yeah. That when weak-minded people or folks that can't win an argument try to attack, they almost always project what they themselves are doing. Look at the Democrats. Just about everything that they've accused Trump of doing, they've been doing.
In spades.
In spades, right? Yeah. And it works the same way in the Wyoming legislature.
So I've got a couple more subjects I want to get to before we close this hour out. One of them, if we take us to the Buckeye State, and Joey, I'd like you to kind of take the lead on this. They're trying to say, what about Biden on the ballot? Take it off.
I'll do my best. Wow, it's been a long time since dude asked me to take it off. But
I was going to say, I was wondering if you could pass that.
Don't worry, there's no sheep here.
I was wondering if you could pass that capitalist.
And I'm not running for governor, so I'll be okay. No, there's lots of stories out there, and this caught my attention immediately, not because of all the things we were dealing with through Trump and his ballot issues and the courts, but because everybody knows I'm a procedure guy, and it boils down to Biden might not end up being on the Ohio ballot for the general election because Ohio has a very clear-cut deadline in its state law to certify presidential candidates from the major parties, which this year falls on August 7th, which is about 2 weeks before the Democrat National Convention. So if the party doesn't select its candidate officially and certify that candidate to the Secretary of State in Ohio by August 7th, then he won't appear on, and there's only a couple of ways of getting around this. One of them would have to be the legislature would have to take up a bill to extend that ballot deadline, or the Democrat National Convention would have to be moved to 2 weeks prior and make sure that they can meet that deadline. And I'm not celebrating this as a ha-ha, Biden might not end up on the ballot in a major swing state. I kind of want to see that play out. I want to see what those numbers would be, Biden versus Trump in Ohio. But I do always stick to, wait a minute, you're running a national campaign. You had to know these dates. And it's even worse for the Democrat Party because they are an admitted top-down political association that says the president is the president of our political party, our convention. He's in charge of all this stuff. You didn't have someone with a calendar saying, hey, our convention dates are going to keep you from being on the ballot in Ohio. I don't mind people not being on the ballot if they fail themselves based on each state's law on qualification to appear on the ballot. Chris Christie wasn't on the primary ballot in Maine, not because anybody kicked him off or sent it through court, because he failed to garner the measly 2,000 signatures it took to appear on that ballot. Failure on your part, based on state law, you're running a national campaign, you should know the election laws in every state. So this is an interesting one I want to watch, because I guarantee you there'll be, oh, you let Trump on the ballot, you have to let Biden on the ballot. But this isn't a court challenge. This is a personal deficiency of sleepy Uncle Joe and his garbage political party. And I'm talking procedurally, that didn't prepare to do the job they keep assuming. And this is another example of it, assuming is going to be handed to Joe Biden for nothing.
Well, you know, Joey, there's a problem with your line of thought there. The idea that the left and the Democrats would follow the rules and the procedures. I mean, how difficult is it for the left to go venue shopping and get a federal judge appointed by Obama who comes in and says, who cares what the rules are? He's on the ballot.
Well, that's a major constitutional issue, because that is a violation of state sovereignty. It's not a federal judge that can say this, because it's a state law.
But they don't care. They
caring
don't.
Okay, I get what you're doing.
They'll do it anyway.
Pairing is not requisite to accuracy and reality. What I'm saying is, if you want to go venue shopping for a convention venue that has an opening 2 weeks before you know you have to get it done. I'm talking about the hypocrisy. And I know you're joking right now, but I don't find this funny. The reason I don't find this funny is because this is another one of those things we talked about quite a few weeks ago when the Trump thing was still up in the air. This is the kind of crap that's going to trick off that civil war that we're trying to avoid, that everybody thinks is such a good idea. It's not. But the argument is completely different. There is no fundamental reality behind the argument that if Joe Biden fails, or the Democrat Party fails to meet this deadline, that it should be automatic that he should be on the ballot. It's a failure of their party and their process. They didn't plan ahead. Sorry, bad luck. But I really don't want to make light of this because it's going to be very emotional for people. And unfortunately, it's going to be emotional for the blue left side of the country who does stupid crap when they get emotional.
So Ohio, as everybody realizes, is a pretty important state, carries a lot of weight, maybe not as much weight as New York or California or Florida, but substantial. Any thoughts on what would happen if, let's just grant the argument, that they didn't make, or that he didn't make it on the ballot in Ohio? What would that look like? How would that affect the election?
Well, it would depend. I mean, how many electoral votes does Ohio have? I mean,
30.
Okay, so there's your answer. But 30 electoral votes, I mean, that's the difference between, that's a big difference between winning and losing.
Well, especially in a race that is projected to be this tight.
I don't think that it's going to be as tight as everybody is saying it is. You know, unless, of course, the Democrats cheat to the level that they did last time, which I think we should absolutely be prepared for. But I mean, I'm a historian. I'm not saying that there's any historical parallel here. But I think that there's, you know, enough resentment of Joe Biden's administration across the country that it may very well end up being a landslide. And let me tell you why I think that. Polls this far out, I don't really think that they mean a whole heck of a lot. You know, on any given day, you'll see a poll that might say Biden one way, Trump the next, or at least a couple months ago, this was the case. Now, they are all saying Trump is ahead. And it's not, and we're not in the margin of error. It's not 1 or 2 points. But again, you know, we're what, some 200 odd days away from the election. So, you know, that's a long time. But when you add in the variable that there's nothing else they can throw at Trump, there are no skeletons in the closet. I mean, there, if there were, they would have found them. I mean, there can be no October surprise like there is in any other election. I mean, Donald Trump is the most investigated person in the history of this world. And so they can't even count on that. And so just looking at it, I think that we're really seeing, you know, a potential landslide election. And I think that Ohio, if Biden doesn't make it on the ballot, if the Democrats don't change their own rules like they do all of the time, like Joey said, find some venue that'll let them in 2 weeks earlier. I think that it's just going to be 30 more electoral votes in Trump's column, period. End of debate.
Yeah, let me correct that before Tom jumps in. I got Florida and Ohio mixed up as the two swing states. Florida has 30. Ohio has 17.
Okay, 17 then.
Yeah, and Ohio, it's been shrinking in population. It's been kind of like the reverse effect of Colorado or California. I'm sorry. California, more and more conservatives move out and the state gets bluer and bluer. In Ohio, liberals have been moving out and the state's been getting redder and redder. Ohio is not even in play this time around. According to the polls, according to the national attitude and atmosphere, Trump wins 32 to 34 states, over 300 electoral votes, if it's a straight up fair election. The mail-in ballots are completely rife with fraud, and they're still in some of the swing states.
And Pennsylvania is one of them. I mean, Pennsylvania is usually not a swing state, but what I'm saying is they most definitely still have mail-in voting.
And Trump is leading in the polls in all the swing states right now.
Yeah, I don't believe polls, but I also don't believe we have straight up elections anymore. I've got plenty of concerns. But yeah. Real quick, back to the Ohio thing. There's nothing stopping the people from writing in Joe Biden. It's not like if Joe Biden can't be on the ballot, someone else's name is going to be in the Democrat column for president. But even with that being the case, we're going to hear all of the same rhetoric. Oh, we were disenfranchised. Our candidates weren't. Trump got special favorite favoritism and all this other stuff. And no, we have to make sure we're pushing the narrative so at least the people we interact with know, hey, it was a failure to adhere to the rules to be considered for this thing. And we're possibly going to see that, you know, next week at the Wyoming Republican Party convention. We're going to be talking about who followed the rules to get there and who didn't. And we won't get into detail on that, but that's the way it's supposed to be. And with each state being sovereign and having its own election laws, sorry, I'm not sorry. If you're going to run a national election and run your national convention in your party, you got to be on top of those dates. It can't be that. I mean, for Joe Biden, it's impossible. Picking the pudding's impossible. But he's got to have a team that care enough about having their puppet back on the ballot to have figured that out.
Well, maybe they're not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Oh, it's kinda monumental incompetence.
Kind of reminds me of Hollywood writers, and they're very closely akin to news journalists in that they seem to have no inventiveness, no curiosity, no... It's sad, and what brings me about this is I saw a deal today that they're gonna remake Popeye.
Why?
Yeah. Same thing that several years back when they came up and wanted to remake True Grit. Why, I asked myself, would you possibly want to try to repaint the Mona Lisa? You
know? It did a good job with that one.
They did, and there were a couple of things about it that I liked better than the original. Yes, I did go see it, but it was more out of morbid curiosity. But I look at all of these things that are coming and the parallels between the news media, which parrots each other, as we pointed out, you know, they have the word of the day, and Hollywood writers who haven't come up with a new character or a new idea in many years. I can't tell you the last new film.
They're not writing anything. Yeah. And whether I'm talking about Hollywood reporters, that's AI. And that's why it all looks the same right now. You have news reporters relying on AI to write stories. You have so-called Hollywood writers relying on AI. And what does the computer say? If you want to make money, reboot, sequel, prequel.
But this goes back before AI, so it's compounded now. And now they've got maybe more of an excuse. Well,
yeah, but the political message is always on the same keel. Yeah, it was always to the left. But now it's just become so predictable because I think they're all using the same AI program. I don't think anyone would use Elon Musk's Grok because that might come out and say something like George Washington was white.
I agree with you, Ken. Like, movies now, they suck. The last movie I went to was the most recent Jurassic Park. And it's not that I was expecting the movie to be that great. It's just I loved the first Jurassic Park, and I'm a total geek about that stuff.
Sometimes you want to see the effects.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That only lasts so long.
I haven't seen an original movie in a very long time. In fact, the lovely Christine and I, more often than not, we're watching older stuff that you know, actually has a plot. And you know, if you think about older movies. The one that comes to mind is The Big Sleep. Great movie. No special effects because they really didn't have the technology to do that.
Nor did they need them. They had a good story and good character.
Yeah, they actually had a good story. And you had to write because that's all that you had. And now you've got whatever CGI special effects you want to create and... all of it looks fabricated because everybody knows it's all fabricated. Gone are the days of, you know, the George Lucas coming out with Star Wars and wowing, you know, the entire movie-going audience. Now you get regurgitated Marvel characters that every time I see an advertisement for one of these Marvel movies, my eyes glaze over and I'm like, I don't care. Movies suck, the writing sucks, and I'd just rather not pay any attention to it.
That's exactly why I watch Marvel movies. So my eyes can glaze over, my brain can shut off and just, ooh, flashy lights, shiny things, cool. And just take a break from all this crap. Ken mentioned, you guys mentioned True Grit. I don't know why they remade it either, although I loved it because I didn't compare it to the original. I'm a huge John Wayne fan. I love Westerns. My dad's a Western actor, so I kind of in the thing. But there are trends, and in the past they have remade classic movies scene for scene that were perfect, of Mice and Men in 92, John Malkovich and Gary Sinise redid that one scene for scene from the original. Another Steinbeck one, I think they redid Grapes of Wrath, but that was kind of a straight to DVD thing. Not a problem. 12 Angry Men, Trial of the Chicago 7, Cape Fear. They redid the movie to kind of modernize, not the story, but the actors, because they knew, hey, minimal effort and we can cash in again. And then we're seeing, you know, you had the classic samurai movies turned into Western, All Your Fistful of Dollars, Magnificent Seven. Those were old samurai movies that were brought back because they could retell the story in a different way. And one of my favorites, retelling of the classics, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is actually the story of the Odyssey or the Iliad. And it's done in a completely different way. Those are different from what we're seeing in mass now, which is we're going to take an old, well-known story and DEI the crap out of it and be so inclusive that the story doesn't even matter anymore. As long as we got one of everything in the pie chart, we can say, and turn on your Netflix, turn on your Amazon Prime, look at the movie selections. The categories now include gay voices and black voices. Like, I just want a good story, man.
Yeah.
I don't care about the color of their skin. I don't want to watch scenes of, you know, them going to bed together. Give me a good story and stop forcing. And if it was organic diversity, fine. It's the forced diversity that's making it crap. And all it is saying, here's a story your parents loved, Popeye. We're going to DEI it and cash in on it again.
The other side of that, there's the propaganda stuff, but we all, when I was in grade school, we had pictures of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln up on the walls. And these people were made bigger than life. They were heroic. They were somebody that you could look up to and aspire to be like that, even if the real person probably didn't live up to that. What it did was it established a high mark, something to aspire to. And what so many movies do now is try to take the things that you thought were beyond reproach and show you how morbid and sick they really were. And I think that's one of the most deceivious things that's going on.
Well, in history, and this is one of the things that fascinates me about it, is oftentimes the people that you think are heroes, sometimes they end up being villains. And sometimes the villains, well, they end up sometimes being heroes. And then the true giants, at least in my mind, end up being a little bit of both. And, you know, when we're talking about movies, it's, for me, a good movie is a retelling of the human condition, that this is a real person, they're going through, you know, this situation, here's how they dealt with it. You know, you mentioned True Grit. My only criticism about the original John Wayne one is that girl's voice was high and annoying.
That's the one thing I liked about the remake.
Yeah.
If they'd have taken her and put her into the original, it would have been
flawless.
Yeah,
just fine, right? But it was so close to the original, like Joey was saying, that really it's not a retelling of the story. It's, what is the word Governor Gordon uses? Reimagining, or everybody uses that word. But it's not a retelling of the story. The classic fail of recent movies is Snow White. You know, they DEI'd the crap out of it. They even got rid of the seven dwarves, and then they had such a backlash that, oh, well, maybe we do need the seven dwarves.
Yeah, Snow White is not white, and they have one dwarf and seven hipsters from Portland.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, I don't know about all that, but I'll tell you, I've said it plenty of times before. This is why I only have like six or seven movies I can watch now, you know. Actors keep making political statements. They keep getting thrown in jail for the crap they've been doing the last 20 years. And what they're putting out now is a pretty horrific drivel. But I still have an old DVD collection. I go back to my John Wayne movies a lot. Love the old Clint Eastwood stuff. And sometimes it's okay to pretend the real world isn't out there because they don't want my attention. They really probably don't want my money either. But before we take off, I wanted to say it is April 8th, which means as of yesterday, the Independence Network is 6 months old. Happy half birthday, gentlemen. Good job. Well
Boom.
Done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Well done, you guys.
Well, no. We're putting most of the burden on your shoulders now.
Well, there was the beginning of the end.
No, not at all.
soak in for the next 6 months.
Yeah, you're going to make up for your time. Touching on that, I've spent a lot of time working on the studio here in Sheridan. We had some issues before, but there are a lot of good things coming, and I'm pretty excited about what's coming up shortly, besides the fact that I don't have to build houses anymore all the time.
Well, we've got about 20 seconds left. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Joey, we'll see you next time.
We will figure something out. We got that convention coming up, so stay tuned to the Independence Network, and we'll have something for you, I promise.
It's Crosstalk Live.
Thanks for listening to the Independence Network. We're a radio station focused on one thing, the truth. Bringing you the truth with verified facts about everything, really. Lying politicians, bad government policy, you name it. Catch your favorite personalities every day on the network. Joey Correnti from Just Blame Joey, Ken Pendergraft from The Ramble Room, and me, David Iverson from Cowboy State Politics.